The universe has good news for the lost, lonely, and heartsick. The Sugars are here, speaking straight into your ears.
I'm Steve Allman.
I'm Cheryl Strayed.
This is Dear Sugars.
Oh, dear song, won't you please share some bittersweet days with me?
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Cheryl.
It's our final episode.
It is the finale.
We have so much ahead.
We have planned such an awesome show with our awesome producer, Alex, and input from everybody on the staff. We're going to look back, hear from former guests. We're going to get letters from listeners. We're going to talk about the nitty-gritty of making the show and the advice that stuck with us and how we feel about all of it, man. We're going to go deep.
Mm-hmm. I really think of this final episode as the long goodbye.
That's it.
Because that's what it is. So let's get to it.
Let's do it.
This is it.
This is it.
Makes me sad.
Makes me sad too.
You know, it's not so ordinary that we have the kind of partnership that you and I have.
Mm-hmm.
We are really that unique mix of true chemistry. How is it that we're able to do this show so peaceably and happily and successfully together?
I think we're both fixers. I think we're both people who see a broken world and really feel called to try to fix it. I recognized very early on, you know, that we were fellow travelers in that sense, that people are in pain and they're struggling. And I think part of the job of human beings is to somehow recognize that their own pain is an ally to other people who are in pain, their own struggles. And I mean, that's certainly what you taught me when you took over the column, Dear Sugar, you know, after I was done horsing around. And you said, actually, no, it is good to try to give counsel to other people. It's good to minister to them. And you do that. And when I see somebody who does that with such grace and such generosity and compassion and just tirelessness, I want to be in a conversation with them.
And here we have been.
Yeah.
Almost 4 years now on this podcast. In December, it would be our 4-year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm feeling nostalgic.
Yeah.
As we're saying goodbye, I'm also feeling that it's time to move on. You know, in my mind, I had always known, even when I said yes to this podcast, that there would be an end. And I remember that was in our first conversation. And I said one thing that I had learned from writing the column is that, for me at least, that advice giving in any given form, you know, had its sort of time limit, that there would be a point where I would say pretty much everything I have to say about all of the problems and sorrows and struggles we have.
Right.
And I certainly felt that in the column after a couple of years. I was like, I've started to repeat myself. So when I said yes to the podcast, I knew that that would be the case. But about this time last year, you and I started talking about how in, you know, 2019, it would come to a close. And what came to pass is that the folks at the Times, you know, knew that we were planning that end, and for various logistical reasons, decided that the end would come a bit earlier than we had planned. And so what I'm feeling right now as we say goodbye is that mix of feeling excited about that moving on that I had planned.
Right.
And feeling a little bit like, oh, I wasn't quite ready yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, my experience in terms of saying goodbye, because that's really, this is what it is. It's a goodbye to this part of our lives. It was really to think deeply. For me, I find it so meaningful, the work that we do. When we do live shows, when we get emails, I can tell how deeply people are hearing us. It's a big world of listeners. It's a community, and we're in dialogue with them. And that means so much to me. I'm so honored to be a part of that, and just to know that, you know, our futzing around and talking really helps people out, keeps them company, and bears witness to what they're going through. And so there's a kind of relationship, you know, where in life, you don't always get to be the person ending the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's a bit how it feels. The struggle is to be grateful, not to say, oh, the ride's over, why'd the ride have to end? But to say, oh God, thank God I was on that ride in the first place. And I saw so many beautiful things, and I mm-hmm. went so many fascinating places, and I met so many beautiful people. I feel about every one of our letter writers that they are just beautiful souls. And I will miss this process of talking with you and collaborating with Alex and the other people we have collaborated with. I will miss that deeply and being in conversation.
I'm going to miss you a lot. Gratitude is what I feel. And a sense of excitement about what we created and a kind of wonder. I will say the world of podcasts has grown so much in the time since we began the podcast.
Yeah.
I very much remember that we were saying, okay, well, the podcast is kind of a little experiment. And then if it goes well, it'll be on the radio.
Right.
Right. We were with WBUR then. That's where this podcast began. And pretty quickly we realized that podcasts really were a thing, and that millions of people all around the world were listening to them. And a lot of them started to listen to ours.
Yeah.
And I would go places and people would come to my events or my readings. And instead of walking up to me and saying, oh my gosh, I love your book, they'd say, oh my gosh, I love your podcast.
Yes.
And that was kind of a revelation to me because you know, when we first began, it felt very punk rock, you know, it's like you and me and Lisa just sitting there. And I remember we didn't have a script and we never have had a script.
Nope.
It really is just us talking.
Yeah.
But I didn't think anyone would actually listen.
Yeah.
And so I feel gratitude for you, Steve.
Right.
For all those reasons. I feel gratitude for the people who helped make the show, our producers over the time that we've been making this show. And I also feel, you know, really, really, really grateful for all of you who listened to us.
Yeah.
And took us into your hearts and minds and argued with us and challenged us and supported us and gave us your time.
Yeah.
So thank you. That is the thing I feel the most deeply right now as we say
absolutely.
Goodbye. Steve, we have a special treat. We're going to hear from some of the guests who've appeared on our show. They called our hotline and left us some farewell messages.
The fun thing is we don't know who they are and we'll have to identify
them.
And we
don't know what they're going to say. So
we don't know what they're going to say either. But can we just say that we had the coolest guests?
Oh, amazing guests.
Okay, just like in terms of breadth and depth.
Yeah.
Because our basic criteria was, are they somebody who has wisdom to offer in an unpretentious way?
Yeah.
And sometimes they were experts, and sometimes they were writers, sometimes they were musicians, sometimes they were comedians.
Sometimes they were Oprah.
Sometimes they were Oprah. Sometimes they were presidential candidates.
And sometimes they were people that not many listeners had ever heard of. But then we would get these emails from listeners who would say, wow, I'm so glad you introduced me to so-and-so.
Yeah.
So throughout today's show, we're going to play voicemails from some of our dearest former guests. They'll share words of wisdom, favorite moments from the show, and lots of farewell wishes.
First unheard message.
Hi, this is Stephen Elliott calling in for the End of the Dear Sugar podcast. I'm the founder of The Rumpus, and I remember when Steve Almond and I first started Dear Sugar on The Rumpus. And at the time, we had no idea how amazing it would become, all the lives that would be changed and saved through the empathic voices and advice of Steve Almond and Cheryl Strayed. So I just wanted to say how grateful I am for being a small part of the amazing run of the Sugars. And congratulations for all the good you've done in the world. And looking forward to all the good you're going to do. And thank you so much for letting me be a part of your lives.
Oh, Steve.
Love always, Stephen.
I love you, Stephen Elliott, wherever you are, wherever you're hearing this. I have so many treasured memories with you, and I'm ever grateful that we met through this website called The Rumpus, really through you, Steve. You asked me to take over this column, for which you were paid nothing.
Yes, that was my offer.
Your offer was, you too can be paid nothing.
Join me.
And I said, okay, I'll do it. And you were kind of relieved to hand it off. And I remember really early on, both of you sending me emails saying,
Holy cow.
Here we go. This is something. Mm-hmm. My book, Tiny Beautiful Things,
is dedicated
to Stephen Elliott and Isaac Fitzgerald. And you wrote the introduction.
I did. You got me to do that, that emotional labor, which I was honored to do.
Well, you got paid for it.
I did.
It's not emotional labor if you're paid.
Next message.
Sugars, this is Amory, producer emeritus, I guess you could say, of Dear Sugar. Now Dear Sugars, of course. And I just want to say I'll never forget the day that I found out that Dear Sugar was going to become a podcast. I think I marched into my boss's office the next morning and I just said, oh my God, I want in. I was already a big fan of the two of you, and working with you only made me a bigger fan of your work and your wisdom and your thoughtfulness. And I'm sure I'm far from alone when I say that when there's a big challenge in life now or a conundrum, I just think, you know, what would the Sugars do?
So
thank you for that. Thank you for being voices of reason and compassion, but also of adventure and joy and wild abandon. Mm-hmm. We all need it. And all my admiration and gratitude to you. Best of luck and take care. Mwah.
Oh, Amory.
Oh, my God.
She's one of those people who you just know, like, she's going to have a beautiful life.
Yeah.
Because she's just good and she's good at everything she does.
Yeah. And I will not tell you, because I do not have the language to express how hard I begged her to come with us to the Times. I literally, we had an encounter. And the thing is that she's gone on to make an amazing podcast herself and to do, you know, big, important work as we knew she would. And yet, at the same time, there was such a sense of simpatico with her that she knew what we were up to, what we were trying to do, you know, as Alex is for us, as Lisa was for us, a third part of the team.
Next message.
Hey, Sugars, it's Cameron Esposito. First of all, congrats on a great run. And I wanted to pass along some advice that my wife,
Rhea
Butcher, gave me. Also a guest on Dear Sugar. Rhea told me the other day that I needed to look at the trees, by which she then explained that so often we were told to not miss the forest for the trees. And I am a big picture person. Especially right now, I can get really overwhelmed by things that bum me out.
Mm-hmm.
Rhea reminded me that you have to see the small good things in the world, the trees, to remember why you are fighting to save the forest.
Mm.
It's good advice.
Wow.
It's great
That's
advice.
That's terrific advice. Both of them, remember how sweet that was? Now, that was, we recorded that episode in Jim Brunberg, our wonderful, amazing producer of live shows.
Yes.
We were recording in that weird sort of couch chair.
Well, it was in Mississippi Studio. It was like where it was in this big room where there are concerts and shows. And I think where Cameron actually was performing that
That's
night.
That's right. And Rhea were performing. They
and
both
Rhea,
were performing.
Together.
Yeah.
And Jim Brunberg was our sound engineer for that kind of first season. We now have had Josh Millman for several seasons and years. But Jim Brunberg, at the very beginning, we did this in Mississippi Studios in the same room. I don't know if this ever got said on the podcast or not, but do you know what happened in that room? The scene in the movie Wild was shot in that room. And that is the scene where Reese Witherspoon, as me, is in Ashland, Oregon, and she goes to see this sort of Remembering Jerry Garcia concert.
Right.
And there's this band playing a Grateful Dead song, and she's kind of making eyes at this guy she's met earlier in the day. All of this, of course, you know, actually happened to me, but it was in this room that they made up to look like a concert hall. And so there it was where we sat on this couch in the middle of this big room.
Yeah.
And made a little sound studio and recorded some of those very early episodes. And Cameron and Rhea were there. And we interviewed them together.
Yeah.
And I love how much they love each other.
Yes.
I think they share that spirit of love in every aspect of their lives.
Yeah.
And so thank you, Cameron, for your words from both of you and great advice. We're so honored that we got to have you both on our show.
Yes. And please leave us backstage passes whenever performing.
Please.
Next message.
Hello, Sugars. It's Mr. Sugar.
I want
to congratulate the whole team and thank everyone. That's Cheryl, Steve, Alex, Lisa, Larissa, and anyone else I may have forgotten, forgive me, just for the heartfelt, deep, and open and honest advice that this show offered. And if I have to pick one piece of advice that really stuck with me, it would be the one on emotional labor and Cheryl's unforgettable and disturbingly true statement, I am the list.
Yes.
It made me think of how I need to step up and not rely on Cheryl for the million and one details that she's able to keep in her mind.
Yes.
And Steve, I'm sure you can relate.
I can. Oh, my God.
But in full disclosure, I have a long way to go because Cheryl had to remind me to call this number. And leave this message. So there you go. Thank you so much for everything. And it just really touched me how many lives you guys have touched. And you should be proud. And we are all very grateful. And on a personal note, I'm especially going to miss the show because now all of Cheryl's advice will be focused completely on me.
Oh, my God. See, now, Cheryl, I want you to live forever, obviously. But if it should happen that you die before me, as unlikely as that seems, you know.
Yeah,
that
Mr. Sugar's
becomes,
your guy. Yeah.
Brian becomes second husband in our family. I mean, I've already prearranged all the details, and people don't know this, but when we would record the show, I would stay at your house and like the almond suite and hang out with your wonderful kids and your wonderful husband and seeing you guys and the way that you relate, how your marriage functions, the kind of good humor and honesty that you guys bring to it has really been inspiring and beautiful. And he's just a beautiful guy in every way.
I'm grateful for
You're
him.
You're both lucky.
Every day, Mr. Sugar has my heart forever. And really, you know, so much of what he has been open to and about as I've been on this whole sugar journey from the very beginning when I began writing the column and on the show talking honestly about his life and my life and our life. And, you know, he's a brave soul.
Yeah.
You know, he signed up for that when he signed up for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, like we laughed. It made me laugh so hard to hear this I am the list business. Because I am the list.
But, you
know,
list.
I love what's interesting about that. I mean, the serious note of what he just said is that he heard something in
That's
that episode
right.
with Gemma Hartley about emotional labor that really actually did, you know, even make an impact on my own marriage.
Yep.
So here I am giving advice about this thing, but also receiving it. And this hit home with me many times when we would be in the studio recording these episodes. What would happen to me is I would go home and have these deep talks with Brian because I would realize by way of counseling other people and their problems that maybe something wasn't quite right in my life or in my partnership.
Yeah.
Doing this show made me a better spouse, made me a better parent, made me a better friend, made me a better co-host and co-worker because it awakened me to, you know, things that I was trying to be to avoid or deny, or I wasn't dealing with in a healthy way.
Right. Or just couldn't see in the case of emotional labor. And I will say, I feel the same thing, specifically a lot of gratitude for Aaron for allowing me to do this work. And in the same way that the advice that we gave and the letters we were struggling with kind of reverberated within us and sort of then into our family system. And I am especially grateful that she would let me fly out here. Most of the time it was in Portland to, you know, record the show and then play ping pong with Brian and, you know, hang out with the kids. And, you know, that was a big ask of her for me to be gone, you know, for 3 or 4 days with 2 and then 3 little kids. And I love her so much. And I'm so grateful that she let me do that work and also was a fan of the podcast. And we really both learned and grew from it.
Next message.
Roses are red, violets are blue, sugar is sweet, not like the truth. I am so sorry to see this end. Cheryl and Steve, but I love you.
It's
Thank
Pam.
You for helping so many people in so many ways.
No, it's Dana, I think.
And here's to many more honest, beautiful pastors. In all of our futures. Bye.
I think it's Dana.
Oh, it's Amanda Palmer.
Amanda Palmer!
Amanda!
Oh, my God! Duh.
Amanda!
By the way, Amanda, you should know that my son bought not one, but three ukuleles. He now plays ukulele. I play ukulele. Remember she played that beautiful song about buy a ukulele?
I remember everything. It was actually, it was our first live
episode.
And it was on the occasion of the launch of my book, Brave Enough.
I remember that.
It was in Cambridge. And I'll never forget, Amanda came backstage before the show and she and I were talking and it was the first time I met her son, who was just a baby, wee infant at that point.
Oh, he was so cute.
Nursing, and we were talking. I was really having that mother talk. Her,
like,
what she'd, I knew what she'd been through in these first few months of the baby's life. And then, of course, we bring her on stage, and what happens? You know, I think it was like the baby started crying. And suddenly, you know, she's got to pull out her boob.
Yes.
And she starts nursing on stage.
Correct.
And in front of this whole audience of hundreds of people.
In a church, by the way. Yes.
Amanda, thank you so much for taking the time to say goodbye to us and to sing for us. I think you were our first live musician on
the show. Right. That's right.
Pretty sure.
I will say that the one regret I carry about how we did things, I would have really liked to have more live music. It was so exciting to see people, because that song about ukuleles, all the songs she sang were songs that were also giving advice.
Yeah. Amanda Palmer, thank you so much for being on our show. We'll never forget you.
We shall not.
Ukulele, small and fearful. Ukulele, brave and peaceful. You can play the ukulele too. It is painfully simple. Play your ukulele badly. Play your ukulele loudly. Ukulele, banish evil. Ukulele, save the people. Ukulele.
So, Steve, as you know, on the show, we always featured letters from people who were seeking advice, but we got other kinds of letters in our inbox, too.
And, yes, we did.
And it was always a delight to read letters of gratitude, sometimes letters telling us specifically how our advice was used in their relationships and their lives, which was really cool. And we're going to just share some of those with you now. Let me read this first one. Dear Sugars, I'm writing you to say thank you. You don't know me, you don't know my situation, but in some strange and indirect way, you've helped me. You see, my husband and I had been struggling in our marriage for a couple of years. Last month, we finally decided that we had tried everything we could, that we had really given it our all, and that we needed to move toward a separation. There's still a long road ahead, but at least we feel like we're doing something to move ourselves forward rather than spinning our wheels and getting nowhere. So how do you fit in? Well, just after our separation, a friend of mine suggested that I listen to your podcast, so I did. I felt so connected and cradled by your words and the stories of your listeners. I didn't have anyone around me that I felt I could burden with the topic of my relationship, my insecurities, and my general falling apart. And then I listened to you, your letters, and I thought, I'm not alone. I can do this. Thank you for what you bring to your listeners, a chance to feel like they are part of something bigger than themselves. Signed, Dana.
Wow. I love that we say it's a conversation and we mean it. That we say things, our guests say things to us, our letter writers say things to us. That generates a discussion between us and our guests. And so, and then there are further discussions. And this, Dana, you found a way with your husband to say, you know what? It is okay for a relationship to end.
Yeah. And I think in a larger sense, this, Dana, this statement you're making, I am not alone, this is really what I hope to do in all the work I do in the world.
Yeah.
That's my mission. I think it's the mission of art. I think it's the mission of literature. This is why I've used some examples from books and literature, and Steve has used lots of them on almost every episode, calling upon that wisdom that's in the pages that always reminds us that we may feel alone in our suffering and our struggles, but we're not.
That's right. That's right. Let me read you a letter, Cheryl, since you did me that kindness. Dear Sugars, I remember listening to the Location, Location, Location episode with Pam Houston. Oh, we love you, Pam Houston. And there was a woman who wanted to move to Paris on that episode. About a year earlier, we'd moved from Silicon Valley to rural Kentucky. From being surrounded by fellow liberals and being able to walk to any of dozens of restaurants to a town where people conceal carry at the local Walmart, where locals voted 70% plus for Donald Trump, what was I, a 53-year-old writer who wrote mostly about feminist issues and step-parenting, going to do in rural Kentucky? By the time I'd heard this episode, I'd been writing some political opinion for the local newspapers, but I was a bit in hiding. I was so afraid of the backlash, I would shut down my social media pages for days and avoid the neighbors. But by listening to your show, where you urged your letter writer to move to Paris to get out there and live her life, I felt encouraged to step out into the full bright light, to own my opinions and my work, to put my stake in the ground. I stopped shutting off social media and started reading the comment section to get a grasp as to whom and what I was dealing with. I found more Kentucky newspapers to publish me and even published work in the Washington Post. I became more outspoken, albeit respectfully, around friends with opposing views. In other words, I stopped hiding and learned to own my liberal female space. I love rural Kentucky now, and I have even found my people. There is that saying, when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. I say, when the writer is ready, the subject she can write about arrives. Cheers, Terry Carter. And we actually have a clip from that episode, so let's listen to that.
The wonderful thing, Paris or Bust, that you're doing by opting to go live in Paris and make love to this Frenchman. And
Cheryl's got a whole scenario.
I mean, like, there's not even a question. I mean, to me, it's like, please go. I mean, I want to just like track you down and drive you to the airport because you absolutely should do this. You're going to open yourself up to so many interesting things, and they will all be helpful in telling you what to do next when it comes to your career and your life.
Now, Cheryl,
I stand by my advice.
Of course you stand by your advice. And not only was your advice, and Pam's for that matter, hopefully helpful to the letter writer, but what we heard is that it was also helpful to Terry, that she was hearing, even though it was a completely different situation, one that was very rooted in a certain way, what America is like in 2018, where she moves out of her silicone liberal bubble into an area where she feels more inhibited. And your advice was, listen, put yourself into that experience. I'll drive you to the airport. And even though the situations were completely different, Terry was really saying, I need to be brave enough to come out of hiding and to write what's in my heart and to figure out what community I'm in and to respectfully but firmly let people know who I am and what I believe. And actually, that's like a model for all of us.
That's right. And that leap to Paris is both literal and figurative. Sometimes it really does mean going to Paris and making love to the Frenchman.
Yes, in our wishes.
Woman. Yeah. And sometimes it means exactly what Terry took it to mean. How do I take risks? How do I leap into the unknown and see what comes? And the answer to that is you do it. You make the decision to do it. And I stand by that advice. I'm so glad it was helpful to you, Terry.
Mm-hmm.
So we were also helpful to people in other practical ways, and perhaps never more so than the episode in which we came upon this catchphrase that our t-shirt company is going to lead with.
Yes, that's right.
This phrase, I am the list, which I can't tell you how many people out and about I've seen people walk up to me and say, I am the list, I am the list, I love that.
Not just walk up to you, but literally I was going to do a reading in the Tewksbury Library, Tewksbury, Mass, as you know.
Yeah.
And I took my nephew, Daniel, who I adore, and he'd never been to one of my readings. And I like get out of the car and this woman comes running up to me and she's got a t-shirt on that says, I am the list. She says, oh my God, I'm so glad to meet you. Look at my t-shirt. My nephew's like, what is your life like?
She went and had it made.
She went and had it made and she insisted we take a photo and I sent you that photo.
You said
it to me, but I told you, it is our destiny. I am the list.
I know, but I want to let you all know, I just received today on the occasion of the recording of this final episode.
Yes.
From our producer, Alex Young. She presented me with a t-shirt in the Dear Sugars colors.
Yes.
That says, I am the list. So, yeah.
That was awesome.
So I'm going to read a letter from a listener whose marriage benefited from that emotional labor episode with Gemma Hartley. Dear Sugars, I want to thank you guys so much for the Emotional Labor podcast. Honestly, it has changed my marriage. I had my usually wonderful husband listen to that podcast and a light bulb went off in his head. Even before he had finished listening to it, he was calling and apologizing for not understanding all that it takes to run a household, buy groceries, keep a schedule, have home repairs done, order supplies, etc. And we don't even have kids at home anymore. He really gets it now. Now, when there's an issue, all I have to say is emotional labor, and I don't have to explain, plead, or complain. He knows what I mean. Thank you. I love your podcast, Trisha.
Next message.
Hi, Cheryl and Steve. It's Gemma from the Emotional Labor episode. I am so sad that there is not going to be any more Dear Sugars podcast. And the reason I loved it so much is because everyone always comes on your show and asks, what should I do? And despite being an advice column, this is a question that the Sugars don't really answer, at least not outright. Instead, you guys offer us truth and wisdom and empathy and perspective. You really give us the true tenets of good advice. You take our laser focus off of the question of what should I do and illuminate the whole picture. Here's what I've learned from listening to the Sugars. The best advice doesn't tell you what to do. It tells you who you are. It delves beneath the question we're asking on the surface and leads us toward a better understanding of ourselves, because it's only through that deeper understanding that we can find our answers. Let's face it, we're never simply asking, what should I do? We're asking, who am I going to be as I face this situation? What am I really made of? Who am I? We can't look to other people to answer that question for us. But over the course of Dear Sugars, we've been able to look to Cheryl and Steve to guide us back to ourselves so we can uncover the answers that were inside us all along. Cheryl and Steve, we're going to miss having the Sugars speaking straight into our ears, but your advice will keep speaking straight to our hearts whenever we find that we need it.
So regular listeners will remember, Cheryl, that every year we would do an update episode. And one of the great thrills of that is that we would actually talk to people who we gave advice to and get an update from them. And so we're going to do that right now. We're going to talk to the woman who signed herself on the letter Tired of Being Cinderella. Let's listen to a little clip of that letter and then we'll talk with her on the phone.
Dear Sugars, my mother died of cancer when my sister and I were young, and shortly after, my father remarried. Because my mother died when I was so young, I viewed my stepmother as my mother growing up. Looking back, it is very clear that she did not view me as her child. My stepmother was strict, demanding, and difficult. At a young age, my sister and I were required to clean the house to perfection. If something was sticking out of a drawer, she would dump the contents on the ground for us to clean up. She told me that she gave birth to me and was in labor for 13 hours, even though as a child I knew this was a lie. As my teenage years approached, we fought more. She would scratch me, push me down the stairs, and pinch me. 2 weeks before my high school graduation, she sent me to live in the detached garage of our very expensive house in our affluent neighborhood. She would not let me inside of the house, not even to use the restroom. I had to go outside in the grass. For 8 years, I had absolutely no contact with my stepmother. She would not allow her children to talk with me, and I was not allowed at family functions. Last year, my father put his foot down and decided I would be welcomed back into our immediate family. It's not been easy for me. I do not like being around my stepmother. It stirs up bad memories. When we've been together as a family, it's been hard for me to see how differently my stepmother treats her own children. I love my half-siblings, but my sister and I are very different from them, and we were raised in very different circumstances. Do you have any suggestions or tips for navigating this situation? I've always had a good relationship with my father and my sister and would like to spend time with them and my half-siblings together. I don't want to be excluded from my own family anymore. How do I let go of the anger I have towards my stepmom? How do I learn to be around her and laugh off her behavior rather than be silently outraged by it? Signed, Tired of Being Cinderella.
Oh, that letter kills me.
I remember that letter so vividly and remember that image of her being, you know, having to go to the bathroom in the grass behind the house and just thinking, wow, that is the Cinderella story.
Yeah, this is abuse. This is an abusive relationship. We told her, our advice to her at the time was, you know, first of all, to just give her support about this relationship, that indeed her stepmother was in the wrong, that no child should be treated that way, no human should be treated that way.
Yeah.
But one thing that we questioned is why We were very surprised at that statement that she said, you know, she and her father were still close.
Yeah.
And we both wondered, why was this letter really only about the stepmother? You know, where was the father whose job it was to
protect,
you know, love her and protect her and be her parent? There were two parents on the scene there.
Right.
And, you know, he was witness to all of this stuff and he did nothing to protect her. She didn't seem to be directing any of her anger or sorrow or disappointment at him. So we encouraged her to think about that and,
well, actually, and
to confront him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was sort of two parts. Set boundaries, which we got help from Jane Allison, the author of The Sisters' Antipodes. And we were more frank in saying, well, part of what you might think about is actually confronting your dad about why he didn't protect you from some of this abuse.
Right. So she wrote to us to let us know what's happened since that podcast was released, and she heard our advice. Let's give her a call and get an update.
Yep.
Hello?
Hi, is this Tired of Being Cinderella?
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I'm so excited to talk to you.
Well, I'm excited to talk to you as well. I have Steve Almond here in the studio with me.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
You guys sound just like you do on the podcast.
So we have to come up with a different name to call you. Tired of Cinderella, of being Cinderella is, you know, it's too long. So can we think of a nickname together? What do you think?
Well, I think Cinderella has a pretty happy ending at the end, and that's how I feel my life has turned out. So I think I'm fine with just Cinderella.
Okay.
Awesome. We'll call
it, Cinderella.
Yeah.
So Cinderella, what was it like to hear your letter read back?
I heard that you guys were doing the stepchildren episode. It popped up on my feed and I got like this pit in my stomach, like, oh, what if they answered mine? And I was getting ready for work and I was just like, crying, like, just, it was a little bit like opening a wound in a sense of like, I felt that I had done my best to kind of say to you, I've done everything I can. And then you guys said, no, there's still more work to be done. And I pulled myself together and I worked with my boyfriend and I told him, okay, there's something that you need to listen to on the way home from work today. And so we listened to it together. And he said, yeah, I think you should really listen to those people. They sound really smart. I mean, he didn't really listen to the podcast. So, you know, it did end up being a pivotal moment in my life. And I still remember that. And I still feel like there was a before and after. And I think I'm doing well in the after much more than I was in the before.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're so happy we were helpful to you.
That's right.
You were so helpful. So thank you. I think your advice and the fact that you answered my question was so, so important to me. And early when you answered the letter, you said, I think it was actually Jane, the guest that you had on the show, said, in America, we sometimes aspire for too much resolution. And that was like an eye-opening kind of statement to kind of let go of this guilt that I had that I was a bad person because I couldn't forgive my stepmother or I wanted to be a hateful person. And I just felt like I may never get over this in my life. It may be something that I just am always upset about, like that I had this childhood. And I felt that if I could focus instead on the relationship that mattered in my life, which was the one with my father, I didn't even need to kind of resolve this thing with my stepmother because I ultimately have decided that she won't have a place in my life, but my father always will. And that to me, just kind of letting go of this idea of like, I was going to resolve things with her, things were going to be better. I wasn't going to feel this way towards her. That like lifted a huge weight off of my shoulders. So I thank you guys, and I thank Jane for giving me that piece of advice.
Well, I'm curious, Cinderella, did you actually talk with your dad, and what was that discussion like?
Yeah, I mean, I think I like felt a little defensive when I heard that because I felt like, oh, maybe I just didn't provide enough detail. I didn't write the letter correctly. You know, my father and I have always been close, even when I was not part of the family for 8 years, you know, it was kind of like his like mistress almost in a sense. He would go visit me without telling people and there was a lot of mystery around it.
Wow.
I understand a little bit more about why he's had to make those choices. Ultimately, I might not, you know, if it were me, I might not be in the marriage that he's in, but if that's important to him, then I have to respect that.
Yeah.
So what you clarified to me was what I had not done effectively was create strong boundaries with him. We live in different states, so he comes to see me every summer. And, you know, it was a couple years ago that he said, oh, well, it would be great if, you know, my wife came too this summer. And he said this in front of her. So I felt like, well, I wasn't going to, in front of her, say, actually, you're not invited because you're a terrible stepmother to me. But I had to pull him aside afterwards and say, actually, she's not invited. So it's either you're coming or nobody's coming. And
wow.
I felt very sure that I was going to be happy with either outcome because I have set that boundary. And that was really important to me. And
yeah.
You know, he ultimately still comes and we have a great time, but it's not, I know there will be a day where he doesn't come or he doesn't like the boundary I've set and we miss out on time together. But I feel that if we're not together every time I want to be together, then I'll just view that as kind of his loss, not mine.
Yeah. I remember we talked about that a lot on that episode while we were trying to offer you counsel, is that it can seem like it's really hard to create a boundary because you do have to be willing for either outcome, for the father to say, okay, well, then I'm not going to come see you. But there is a beautiful liberating clarity in finally saying what you want and what you need.
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's so hard to do. You're making it sound very easy, but I hope other listeners are hearing that that is a whole journey that you have to go on before you let go of an idealized vision of like, well, he's going to choose me over her, or, you know, why did he choose her in the first place? Like, you've moved past all that to how much time do we get to spend together? Let me value all the time we do get to spend together. And let me also say, if he misses out on spending time with me, that's his loss. And I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, I've had a long-term boyfriend for 4 years. I think that helped things too, because I felt that I was kind of creating my own family and I could have my family with my boyfriend. And not to say the solution to making this easier is having that significant other in your life, but it definitely personally helped me because I felt that even if my dad didn't want to come, I at least had my own family that I was creating on my own to turn to.
Oh, yeah. When you come from a difficult family, a family where there's abuse, the true mark of being able to move into the world is that you view that family and say, okay, well, that's not how I want to do business in the family that I create. It's got to be more love. There can't be abuse. And everybody's got to feel okay about the boundaries that everyone else is setting.
Yes. And I have listened to almost every episode you guys have put out. So it wasn't, although I'm very, very grateful you answered my letter, there have been lessons in almost every letter that you've answered that have helped me deal with this situation. So I really want to thank you, not just for answering mine, but answering so many that have been so helpful to me.
Oh, thank you, Cinderella. That is very sweet of you to say. And it's also really good for us to hear, because that is what we try to do. We can only answer so many letters. And we're always sending a little note, a sort of silent note out to the universe, hoping that people will take from each letter that we answer, you know, each episode, some truth or some piece of advice that will help them in whatever struggles they're up against.
Yeah.
And hey, I'm so glad to hear that things are getting better with your dad and frankly with your stepmom too, because you've learned how to set better boundaries for yourself and you're doing that beautifully. So congratulations.
And keep going.
Thank you. And thank you for everything that you've done.
Thank you.
Next message.
Hello, Cheryl, Steve, Alex, and the Dear Sugars team. It's Rima here. I am so sad that Dear Sugars is coming to an end, but I do know that you've created a perfect body of work, one that will keep living and evolving for years to come. I thank you for the abundant wisdom, love, and insight you have brought into the world. Thank you for teaching us that the journey to becoming our bravest selves begins with radical empathy. On a personal note, thank you for inspiring my work and my life and for giving me the honor of speaking on Dear Sugars on the emotional abuse episode. I'll share with you what I consider a family heirloom, a piece of wisdom given to me by my late beloved grandfather, my Nana Pai. Nana Pai was a writer and a leader in Bangladesh's war for independence from Pakistan. Nanabhai taught me, through the way he lived, that every obstacle in life is an opportunity for us to behave as our best selves. Through him, I learned that there will always be dark days, and on those days, more than ever, we must decide to be the light. There will be days when rising feels too difficult. Remember then, we are the spine of our lives. Resilience is a muscle. The more we use it, the stronger it grows. Cheryl, Steve, and everyone at Dear Sugars, I'm sending you all my gratitude and love. Bye.
So, Cheryl, as we both know, we're so thrilled to have so many different guests, and so many people responded to Esther Perel's advice. We talked with her twice, but we did that big series on infidelity, and she talked to us for the third part, and we both were agog at her wisdom, and we were not alone, it turns out. In fact, we got a letter that spoke directly to a listener who was profoundly affected by that episode. She was in a marriage that was floundering, and she got into a passionate emotional affair with another person. And in fact, it was listening to the episode that entirely changed the course of her life. She writes, Perel described the way our culture emphasizes marital bliss in a way that's simply not attainable. We expect everything of our partner, she said. Her articulation of the way marriages used to be versus what they are now, all of it, it undid something inside of me. Suddenly, I saw how I was expecting my husband to be my intellectual equal and my passionate lover and my stoic mountain man and my old-fashioned but also feminist partner, plus a great dad and a provider. The list goes on. Who can possibly live up to that ideal? Why on earth would I need him to provide all of those things for me? The reconciliation is a long story, but I have to tell you, that episode, coupled with our honesty about our feelings regarding the relationship for the first time ever and our dedication to making it work, saved our marriage.
Wow.
Yeah. Our relationship now is healthy and comfortable and realistic. I love him in a way I never did before. And now that I'm not putting so much pressure on both of us, and now that we're being open about our needs and desires, it's something sustainable. I still don't believe we're meant to stay with one person for our entire adult lives, but I believe we can. It's a choice we make every day, and I think we'll be okay. So thank you, Steve and Cheryl. Thank you, Esther Perel. Sincerely, the lover.
Wow. I'm so glad, lover, that we were of use. We actually have a clip from that episode. Let's give it a listen.
Yeah.
I think that as a teenager growing up in Europe, I certainly embrace the romantic ideal. I mean, who doesn't? It's not just the fairy tale stories that you read as a five-year-old. It's the movies you watch. It's the novels you read. The romantic ideal is powerful. Sometimes I think that the divorced people are the true romantics. One thinks of them as the disillusioned and the ones, but in fact, they are the true romantics. They believe in the model. They just think they chose the wrong person, and next time I'll do better. So sometimes I think that for me, I chose to divorce my belief system rather than my husband.
Hmm. It's still like, wow, listening to that.
It's like, just keep talking.
It's truth. It's truth.
It's truth. And it landed. And I love how the advice that Esther gave in this episode helped save a marriage. And the advice that we gave in another episode helped another listener bid farewell, you know, to a marriage that was not working for either party with grace and with generosity. You know, it's not the outcome.
Yeah.
It's the process.
Yeah. I think, too, so many times we on this show have told stories about our own lives. And I know that that is a powerful thing to hear other people saying, this happened to me, when you feel that sense of connection and kinship to somebody. And this is what this next letter writer talks about. Hi, Sugars. My best friend and I have been listening to your show for a few years now. Most recently, I resonated with the episode Trust Your Body and everything that you and your guests said. I struggle with body image on a daily basis, and I've been in therapy without much success improving my self-confidence in this area. But hearing that you struggle with the same issue, Cheryl, and hearing you say that it is exhausting to continually struggle with body image was extremely moving. It was so validating to hear those words from someone that I've admired. It truly is exhausting. Your podcast helped me and gave me a resource to turn to moving forward. And the other side of this, is not just hearing other people's stories, but writing our own. And so many letter writers have told us how important it was to them simply to write the letter, yes, whether we answered it or not. And joyful listener, the woman who just wrote to me about identifying with me on the Trust Your Body episode, in her letter goes on to say, a few years ago, I was struggling to get out of a bad relationship cycle with someone that I had strong feelings for. I decided to write to you, Sugars. I never sent the letter, but I did compose it on my phone and I kept it for quite some time. Writing out my feelings and thinking about how the two of you might respond to my situation helped, even though I never ended up sending it. It helped me get clarity on what was actually going on in my life and why maybe I was interacting with this person the way that I was and how it was preventing me from getting where I wanted to go. Writing to you as my intended audience helped me begin to work through these issues. I'm happy to say that I'm now in a healthy relationship. So I think that that's a powerful piece too. Having to write to somebody explaining the nature of your sorrow or your suffering or your struggle can be very clarifying.
And not just to somebody, I think it's important to say to somebody who you know will hear it. And that's one thing that I want to emphasize. We're still going to keep our inbox and we are not going to be responding to people through the podcast, but we're definitely going to be urging people to just simply to be able to tell the story. The moral of Moby Dick is, in the end, we are rescued by the telling of the tale. The ship might go down, everything might be destroyed with it, but it's the telling of the tale that's our bulwark against chaos, the chaos of the inner life. And so I want to let everybody know out in Sugarland, we are going to keep that inbox open. I don't know about you, Cheryl, but I am going to be checking in. And we also just urge people to compose them as a way of making sense of their lives.
Yeah. And this is a really good time to note that the podcast is ending, but the column isn't ending yet.
That's right.
We'll be continuing to do the column for some time. And so, of course, write us your letters. You know, I've often thought that we could just publish a whole book that, with no answers. You know, I've published Tiny Beautiful Things that is letters and my answers, but I've often thought it could just be letters.
Yes. Thank you for the letters we received and read on today's show. And thank you to the literally thousands of people who wrote to Dear Sugar when I was writing the column, Dear Sugar when you were writing the column, and to those of you who wrote to Dear Sugars, the podcast. It was such a gift that you guys trusted us. And actually, people say to me all the time, Cheryl, I don't know if you hear this, they say, you guys must edit those letters. Those letters are always so beautifully written. You must be like spiffing them up with your writerly tools. And I'm always like, nope. We definitely will sometimes condense a little bit or clarify or like mess with a little bit of grammar just to make it easier to read. But basically, the letters you read are exactly what people wrote to us. Yeah. That's how beautiful people are when they're telling the truth.
Next message.
Dear Cheryl and Steve, this is Esther Perel. I have never met you. I have only spoken with you at length for 3 episodes, talking about desire, talking about infidelity, talking about relationships. And what I would like to say is that I enjoyed those conversations immensely. The scrutiny, the nuance, the humor, the care, the curiosity that you brought to your subjects and to your guests touched me deeply, will stay with me. I don't know where you're going from here. I don't even know why you're ending this. Everybody loves this show. But whatever you do, I wish you the best. I thank you for having included me. And I hope one day we get to meet each other face to face. Much love. Bye-bye.
So Cheryl, now we're going to call another listener, actually get a live voice on the phone. Ready to do it?
I am.
Let's do it.
Hello.
Hi, is this Mary Margaret?
It sure is.
Hi, Mary Margaret. This is Steve Almond. I'm here with my partner, Cheryl Strayed. You may have heard of her.
Hi, Mary Margaret.
Hi. I am so excited to be talking to both of you right now.
As are we.
So I want to note to our listeners, you did not write us a letter seeking advice. Is that right?
Correct. I think maybe both of you put something on social media about past episodes that had made an impact or helped you make a decision. And that's what I had responded to.
Could you tell us about that episode and its impact on your life?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was beginning of 2015. I just moved back to my hometown and Elizabeth Gilbert was your guest. And I was, you know, just listening as I was driving around for work and did not know what the topic of the show was going to be. And we were, my partner and I were right in the midst of like trying to make this final decision about whether or not to have biological children. And so as the episode starts unfolding, I'm, you know, driving and thinking like, oh my God, they're talking about the thing.
Right. We talked about having children or not having children or, yeah, you know, all of those choices we have.
Yeah. And so of course, you know, I'm driving and I'm thinking, oh my God, like I don't, they're talking about me, right? Like what's going to happen in this episode. And I knew that Elizabeth Gilbert did not have children. So I was so interested to see what, you know, everybody in the conversation was going to say. And there was a point, and Cheryl, I don't remember if you said it in response to Liz or if she said it, but you were talking about, you know, if you don't have kids, like what does life look like, right? And trying to imagine what that's going to be. And one of you said something like, you know, what are you going to do if you don't have kids? And the other person said everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there was something about that I just needed to hear that made me think about it in a new way. Right. I have a genetic disorder that I didn't want to pass down. I also learned that it makes pregnancy very dangerous for me. So we knew all of that and we kind of knew what that meant for us and the choice that we needed to make with that, but we hadn't really said it yet. And I think that for me, a big part of it was my models for like being an adult human and being a woman, right? Where you have kids and that's what you spend a lot of your time doing and talking about and planning for. And I think I couldn't really imagine what was going to be in its place or what my other options were. And so hearing just that simple phrase, everything else, mm-hmm, I think gave me permission to imagine like, what are those things and what do you want them to be?
Wonderful. I mean, I think that that's always the answer. I mean, you can also do lots of things if you do have kids, either way. But, you know, I think that there's been this false story that we've all been told. And Steve is always talking about the bad stories and the good stories, right? And
right,
that's a bad story that you have to have children to have a meaningful and rich and full life. And B, that if you do have children, that experience of motherhood or parenthood is the thing that defines you.
Right.
What I love about what's happening about this conversation, and certainly we had that with Liz, and it sounds like you really heard it on a deep level, is we get to make choices. We get to have consciousness about things. We don't have to follow the narratives that have been handed down to us by generations and traditions that don't always serve us.
Yeah. And I would say that sometimes, like when I'm reading a piece of writing, especially like a student manuscript, sometimes there's a phrase that just comes leaping off the page. It's almost like it's in bold face because it's such a pure and efficient shot of truth. And I usually say that's something you should think about as the title. And I think the phrase "do everything else" is also one of those that leaps out.
So Mary Margaret, the most important question I have for you is, do you have any tattoos? I think everything else is a good tattoo. Everything else.
Right. Well, you know, it's very interesting. As I have five, and for whatever reason, my favorite number has always been six. Don't know why. And I'm looking for my six. I kind of want to like round it out with like one more tattoo.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea.
You know, I've gotten greedy. There are all these people who have tattoos, you know, of things I said in Tiny Beautiful Things Are Wild. Yeah. And now I'm just like a tattoo hoarder.
Yeah.
Then we'll listen back to the podcast and it'll turn out that Liz said it.
Exactly.
Right.
That's right.
Right.
So you made that choice not to become a mother. Is that true?
Yeah. So I think, you know, 2015, we kind of knew it and like kind of said, my partner and I to ourselves, like, okay, this is the plan. And I had gone to several doctors before who would say, oh, you're too young, or, you know, we don't do any kind of permanent procedure until you've had at least two kids. And like, no matter what I would say, I went through five doctors before I found one. And March of last year, had my tubes tied, and the relief of, you know, not having to worry about it, but also I think kind of taking ownership of that decision, which at first felt so disempowering. I felt like I have this genetic disorder that I didn't ask for, and now I have to make this choice, and it feels like I don't really have a choice. And so for me to be able to make that choice about my own healthcare was just a really empowering moment within that whole process.
Yeah. What does everything else look like for you? You don't have to give us an exhaustive list, but what has some of the major items on your everything else list been?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, I am a social worker and work with the people I want to work with that I want to serve. My partner is an urban farmer. And wow. We took those jobs because we didn't have anybody relying on us. You know, we could say, well, you know, if we have to eat, you know, lentils and whatever he farms for a while, like we can make that choice for ourselves. So, I mean, it's been the jobs that we want to take, we've taken. We travel a lot. It's funny, I think to a lot of people, it looks like, oh, it must be nice. You get to kind of flit around and do, and it's like, well, I mean, but we made that choice, you know?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
You know, even adopt someday if we decide, oh, we actually do want to be parents and this is the way we're going to do it.
Right.
I mean, it feels less limiting than it originally did when we realized we had to contend with this health information.
Yeah.
And now it feels like, wow, yeah, everything else. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
And I love that everything else includes growing food to feed and nourish people, and also in your work, you know, caring for people. It's not like you guys are saying, let's go off and have adventures that, you know, are about our own pleasure or enjoyment. You also have dedicated yourself each in your own way to a life of service and nurturance, and that's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks for saying that.
So, Mary Margaret, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us today. It was really cool to see the way the show has impacted your life.
Well, thank you for making a show that's impacting people's lives.
Awesome. Go do everything else.
Yeah, get that tattoo.
I will. Absolutely.
Done and done.
All right. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Thank you both. Bye.
Next message. Hey, Cheryl. Hey, Steve. It's Liz Gilbert calling, your old buddy and pal, and I was just wanting to add my voice to the chorus of people who love you and are grateful to you, and to congratulate you on the beautiful work that you've done with Dear Sugars and the way that you have curated your hearts in order to create this oasis of a place where people can come to be vulnerable and to be touched and to be helped and most of all to be heard. I'm really honored that I got to be a part of it, even for like 2.5 seconds. And I'm excited to see what you're going to do going forward from here. You guys are a treasure. I love you both. Bye-bye.
End of messages.
So, Steve.
Yes, ma'am.
I think that you think that when we finish recording here that you're going to the airport.
I do.
But actually, we're going to a tattoo parlor.
Oh,
you think you're
going
to get out of this without getting a tattoo with me?
I hope not.
Do you know what my tattoo is going to say? Guess what my tattoo is going to say, in which I honor our partnership on this show.
Oh, my gracious. What would it say?
I'll give you a hint.
Okay.
LMC are the initials. Late.
Model.
Capitalism,
baby. Yeah, that is kind of the ultimate tramp stamp.
That's right. This will be the phrase by which I most dearly remember you.
I'm not sure dearly is the right adjective or adverb there.
Late model capitalism. One of the things I learned from you,
yes.
I mean this seriously, when
yes.
I think about bringing the show to a close, is there are so many things that I learned from you. I just got a little lump in my throat there.
Aww.
There are so many things I learned from you. But one of them is that every problem I think that you've ever considered when it comes to our letter writers or to the friends in your life,
yeah,
you think so expansively about the problem. You never think that the problem is the problem itself. You always think it's connected to two things. You think it's connected to the culture and the political context, and you always think it's connected to the past and the deepest things.
Yeah.
So you're always going deeper and wider in your examination and interrogation of the problem itself. And your advice often contains the request that people look at those problems within those realms.
Yeah.
If you feel envy, what has capitalism taught you about wanting more than you have?
Right.
If you feel like you don't have enough love in your life, what happened to you back in the past where you were wounded in that place where you didn't get what you needed?
Right.
To see the thoroughness with which you do that has been really inspiring to me and enlightening to me. And I just think you're really, really good at doing this job. And I want to thank you for being not only a friend to me, but also such an inspiration and such a genuine force of good in the world by sharing all of the deeply, profoundly articulate wisdom that you've shared on this show.
Well, I mean, you somehow managed to combine two very disparate identities. And those identities are that you are the ultimate nurturer and you're also a badass. And I see you all the time as we move through the world together in restaurants, at writing conferences, at live shows. Every time somebody comes into contact with you, it is a big deal to them. It's a big deal because your work has meant a lot to them. The stories you tell have meant a lot to them. And the way you move through the world, which is the same on the page as it is in real life. Who you were in Wild is the kind of radical empathy and honesty. That's who you are in the world. Badass and nurturer. And that means that you don't get any time off. You don't get to just check in and say, this person is saying this very heavy thing about when they read my book and it helped save their life. And I get to just say, okay, where do I sign my name? Oh, you're sweet, and pat them on the head. You don't do that. And that's a tremendous amount to carry. And part of the reason, well, listen, I mean, that is my model to say, how can I move through my experiences with that much compassion, holding myself to that kind of emotional account? Every time we've discussed the possibility of ending the show and so forth, I've always said the same thing, which is, I've been so honored to be able to do this work and to do that meaningful work with you. And I also feel, on the other hand, I love me Cheryl Strayed's writing, and I want another Cheryl Strayed book in the world, because underneath everything is a badass writer.
Well, and thank you.
So I'm eager for that to happen.
Thank you. That, and right back at you. You know, our relationship began as one in which I was your fan. And so when I met you at that conference, and Torch had just come out, I had read both of your books. And so I'd read My Life in Heavy Metal, and I'd read The Evil
B.B. Chow,
and I'd done with your stories what I do with all the writers I love. You know, I'd really dismantled them and said, how did he do that? And how is he so funny? You know, that was the beginning of my love for you, which was a love on the page.
Right.
And we knew each other through our writing. So here I'd been a Steve Ellman fan. Then I read that early Dear Sugar column, was moved to write to you, not knowing it was you.
Right.
And then you said, it's me. Will you take over the column? And that was really where our friendship moved from acquaintanceship to friendship.
That's
and deepened
right.
over time.
That's right.
And certainly deepened while making the podcast. So we came to this show as writers. Our idea was to really give advice through storytelling
through
and bringing in books and sharing our own lives. And I think that we achieved what we set out to achieve. It took turns that we didn't expect. It went in directions that were kind of thrilling and fun and surprising. And that's the most you can ever ask for. We stayed deep, deep friends through the whole thing, which is also a kind of achievement. We counsel so many people who have partnerships that don't work out, whether they be friendships or working relationships or romantic relationships. And I'm so proud that, you know, I feel closer to you than ever.
Yeah.
And I feel really genuinely honored and lucky to be your friend first and foremost, but really to have spent all this time in this dark room with you and talking to these microphones.
Yeah.
And I really respect and honor what we're both about to step out and do. And that is return to that primary role that we both really feel that we're called to do. And that is write more books, write more stories, do that heart work that we do, not just in the world, but on the page.
Yeah. This sounds a little odd, but I know you have come to expect slash dread that I am going to read a little quote from a piece of literature.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a little bit silly, but if there's a literary figure who you remind me of, it's Charlotte from Charlotte's Web. It's true. And that I know that cast me in the Wilbur role as the pig. And
but that works. That works.
That works. Absolutely. I'm in the mud. I'm in the mud, and I've always...
in the best way. Wilbur's awesome.
Yeah, he's kind of a dope. At least I'm not Templeton. But anyway, the point is that I think of you sometimes in the way that Wilbur thinks of Charlotte, that you are, to a lot of people, really not a savior. I don't want to dress it up too much, but you're somebody who ministers to people and really shows up for your life in every moment, and that people need that. And at the end of Charlotte's Web, Wilbur says this about Charlotte, and it's so true of how I feel about you and the time that we've been able to spend together. He says, it is not often that someone comes along who is a true friend and a good writer. And that's how I feel about you. I love you, partner. I really do.
I love you back and right back at you. Okay, Steve, this is the last time we're going to do this. We're going to read the credits. A lot of you listeners may not listen during this portion of the show, but the people we name here are powerfully important in us bringing the show to you. They make the show with us.
So, Dear Sugars is produced by the New York Times in partnership with WBUR, and we need to say, both of those big companies were incredibly generous in taking a chance on our weirdo Radical Empathy podcast.
And I just want to say, the folks at WBUR, Iris
Adler, Charlie Kravitz.
Thank you, Iris and Charlie, and for believing in us from the beginning.
And everybody at WBUR who supported us in ways that were probably invisible to us. Our producer is Alexandra Lee Young. Where to start with Alex?
She rocks. We love her.
She jumped in and was absolutely heroic in immediately understanding the nature of the show. I mean, you talk about a quick study. She figured out who we were, what our strengths were, and what the show is really about. And, you know, we felt that so deeply with Lisa, our founding editor.
Lisa Tobin.
She knew that. She saw it. And Amory Sievertson, who took over and shepherded us through, you know, a year or so at WBUR. Michelle Siegel, who was fantastic. And for the most part, the show, you know, the most of the heavy lifting is you, me, and a producer, and also Josh.
Josh Millman. Our sound engineer at Talkback Sound and Visual in Portland, Oregon. But Josh, you know, it's interesting because as my experience at these things, you know, oftentimes the engineer will just be there pushing the buttons, right. And this is a different kind of show.
Yeah.
And we need a different kind of engineer. Josh Millman often brought his own, I don't know, there was something about his presence in the room as he listened to all of these hours of us talk about some of the most deep things that we talk about.
I agree with you. There's a certain energy in a show like this. It's when we make it, it's small enough that the whole team really has to pull together.
And there is a whole team.
That's right.
Managing producer Larissa Anderson, editor Paige Cowett, our executive producer Lisa Tobin.
And founder,
our editorial director Samantha Hennig. This whole team of people who are all in New York City at the New York Times.
Right.
And you know, they do everything from check the email to really make us sound good on the show and make very important decisions about how to essentially, you know, shape the direction of each episode, the tone of each episode. And of course, that's backed by our amazing band, Wonderly. Every week, you would hear that beautiful song they made with vocals by Liz Weiss opening the show.
And part of the reason that it sounded so good is because we've, throughout the run of the show, had amazing mix engineers who make us sound beautiful. Eddie Cooper is the person who's been doing that for the last several months and has done a sterling job.
So even though we're going away, you can find our website at nytimes.com/dearsugars. And you can still send us your letters. As we said, I think it's powerful to write a letter at dearsugars@nytimes.com. And we are continuing to write our column, The Sweet Spot. Online, you can find it at nytimes.com/thesweetspot. Bye, Steve.
Bye, Cheryl.